You're listening to Halford and Bruff.
The PJ Tour looks like a horse's ass right now.
Did they give you any sort of heads up that this decision was coming?
No, they're all a bunch of cowards.
When I first saw it, I thought it was a joke.
Good morning, Vancouver 601 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Bruff. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program, 90 seconds into it. Hour one is brought to you by Johnstone's Barbecues. You don't pay more to shop with the experts at Johnstone's Barbecues. They're open 5 days a week with two locations to serve you. Visit them online at johnstones.com.
This is the part where I talk about Kintech.
It's the part where you do stuff.
Every once in a while, I like to mix it up. I feel like we get very predictable right in the morning. We're coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider. Supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintech.net.
It is a Wednesday, Canadian Championship Wednesday for the Whitecaps here. I'm wearing my Whitecaps hat on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Guest list begins 6:30. David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host, is going to join us on the program. We will look ahead to Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final. There was a trade, a big trade of significance, mid-Stanley Cup Final. How dare you, Daniel Briere and the Philadelphia Flyers? How dare you?
It's a couple days off.
There are a couple days off, yet it is still right in the middle of the Stanley Cup Final. So David Amber is going to join us.
I think you're giving too much weight to Gary Bettman's request that there's not enough, that like there's no news whatsoever during the Stanley Cup Final. He just doesn't want like bad news.
Gary rules with an iron fist, and he says no news of any kind.
No
during my
news
Stanley
blackout.
Cup final.
He doesn't, Jason, a blackout.
All. That's exactly
That's
how it goes.
Not what happens.
7:30, Jason Sobel, golf writer from the Action Network, is going to join us. We'll talk about the Canadian Open, probably mostly the Canadian Open, and only the Canadian Open. With
Will
Jason
a Canadian
Sobel.
Finally get a win for the first time since, what is it, Pat Fletcher or something won?
In the 50s.
That's probably the biggest storyline.
Maybe some nice pitch and putt memories, some good stories.
What constitutes a hole in one? Yeah. Does a pitch and putt hole in one count? Yes. We'll ask Jason Sobel that at 7:30. 8 o'clock, Rick Campbell, head coach of the BC Lions. The Lions begin their CFL campaign on Thursday. That's right, tomorrow in Calgary before the big home opener a week following where LL Cool J will be playing the pregame concert. So we'll talk to Rick Campbell at 8 o'clock about everything that's going on ahead of the Lions season opener. 7:30, it's Jason Sobel, golf writer from the Action Network, and 6:30, David Amber to talk some hockey, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it? You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online today at bccsa.ca. We begin with Tuesday's news. They came out of nowhere. It was cool that it was here on the Halford and Bruff Show, but it took everyone, including the hosts and essentially every single player on the PGA Tour, by surprise. The news that the PGA Tour was merging with LIV Golf. All pending litigation mutually ended. A truce called. Although we're uncertain what the future of golf will look like, we know that it will be together, Jason. Together.
Togetherness.
Together.
And nobody is coming off worse than PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan.
Not a single person.
In all this. Not only does he look like a hypocrite who misled the players that stayed loyal to the PGA Tour, he comes off like a weak and possibly clueless leader who underestimated the size of his side's war chest and as a result had to capitulate by accepting the same dirty money he was railing against not too long ago. Either that or he just looks like a liar.
Right.
So for the people that will say, well, Jay Monahan was planning this all along and look at Jay Monahan is taking care of himself. Hasn't he? Maybe he's a smart guy. Okay, well, then he's a smart liar.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
You know, you can take your pick. You can either say he's a really crafty liar, or you could say he was clueless and he underestimated the legal fees that it was going to cost to fight LIV Golf. He underestimated LIV Golf and the backers of LIV Golf and how much money they were willing to spend to fight all this. So clueless, liar, whatever you want.
Well,
Jay Monahan does not look good in all this. And apparently there was a meeting yesterday at the RBC Canadian Open. That did not go well for him. Reports from the players say it was 90% negative and that there were even some standing ovations when it was suggested that he resign.
I'm going to put it this way. When your first public statements in the aftermath of a big decision or a controversy in this nature are, quote, I recognize that people are going to call me a hypocrite. Chances are you're going to have a bad day and maybe a subsequent bad few days. But that's exactly what... Are we calling him former PGA Commissioner Jay Monahan?
No, he's not. Because, okay, so the way it's happening, the way it's going to be structured is that the PGA Tour is going to remain and it's going to be a... It's going to still be like a tax-free entity.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
But then they're going to, I don't know if they're going to, they're going to create a new commercial entity.
Okay.
So this kind of actually has me reminiscing about the Canada Soccer Business deal where yes. You're like, you've got the commercial entity over here. So there's going to be a for-profit commercial entity that Saudi Arabia is going to invest in heavily, but that apparently the PGA Tour is going to remain a majority shareholder in. Regardless. There's going to be two entities. Jay Monahan is saying, well, I'm still going to be the commissioner of the PGA Tour. And oh, by the way, I'm going to be the CEO of the new for-profit commercial entity. So the good news for Jay Monahan is that he's probably going to make some good money out of all this. He's certainly taking care of himself by making sure that he's deeply involved in both the ventures, the PGA Tour that remains in the new commercial entity. And even if he is forced to resign, I bet he's getting some money out of this.
Right. So is it fair to say that Monahan and the PGA Tour come out looking awful? Like, there's no silver lining in any of this from a terms of a public relations standpoint or an optics standpoint.
Yeah, he doesn't look good. And I'm sure that he's thought this through and gone, you know, this isn't going to look good for me when it comes out. So how is he going to try and make this good with the players? The players who yesterday at the RBC Canadian Open were giving a standing ovation to anyone suggesting that he resign. Mm. He's going to try and give them money. So,
I want to play a brief clip here. This is Scott Stallings, who is he's been on the PGA Tour for a number of years. I think he's a 3-time PGA Tour winner. One of the many, I mean, I don't want to call any professional golfer rank and file, but I don't think anyone can pick Scott Stallings out of a lineup. He was contacted yesterday, and in a very short 12-second clip, I think really encapsulated the feelings of the majority of the PGA Tour players who were not only caught off guard by this news, which is a thing in and of itself, but also felt as though they were lied to throughout this year-long process in which Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour condemned LIV Golf only to get in bed with them at the end of this 12-month-long bashing. Here's Scott Stallings on what he had to say about Jay Monahan.
When I first saw it, I thought it was a joke.
If you had Jay Monahan right now in front of you, like what would be the first question you would ask him? What do you want to know about this whole deal?
And can he, like, how many other sides of his mouth can he speak out of?
Because the reality of this right now is that this goes way beyond sports. I think we can make that abundantly clear, right? This is so much more than golf, and it's not anyone trying to make a story out of it. It was a story going into this, which has now taken a surprising, unexpected, dramatic turn, which now makes you reevaluate everything that's gone on over the last 12 months. For me, the most pathetic part in all of this is that a gentleman, Jay Monahan, could go in front of an audience of that size that he knew was watching on a number of occasions and essentially suggest that real issues like human rights violations and real tragedies like 9/11, he acted like they mattered to him and to the PGA Tour.
He even made them personal. He was like, I knew a couple of families in 9/11 that were affected by 9/11.
And then eventually it became abundantly clear that they did not give a crap about either of those things. That the only protestation that they had against Liv was that it was infringing on business and their ability to earn future money. Right? This is all very cut and dry. It's embarrassing. You know, we talk for a living for hours on every day. And occasionally we'll probably throw something out there that we're like, I regret saying that, or I didn't frame that properly, or maybe I went too far or whatever. But they did this for the better part of 12 months. There was a repetitive hammering home of the message where at some point someone could have checked them and been like, are you sure you want to keep playing the morality card here, Jay? Because at the end of the day, you might have to end up in bed with the same people that you're railing against.
I am continually impressed and amazed by the absolute lack of shame that a lot of leaders, both political and business, have in this world. And I applaud them.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of us, I applaud them sarcastically. I think a lot of us cannot put ourselves in Jay Monahan's shoes and think, okay, I'm going to say all this stuff, and then afterwards, I'm going to actually just do a deal with the people that I was moralizing against, right? Like, and maybe that's how some people get rich, honestly. Maybe that's how some people do it.
Just say whatever you need to say to get wherever you need to go.
You
can't have morals to get rich is what I've quickly learned.
What was the Montgomery Burns line?
Yeah,
the three things you need to get
money,
rid of?
Or family.
Religion.
Friends
religion.
And religion.
Yeah,
and why don't we add morals?
Sure. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like a lack of shame.
Yeah.
And a willingness to accept the type of criticism that Jay Monahan has said, okay, I'm willing to accept that criticism. Like, he's like, maybe that's why he's in the position he is. He's able to do it.
Like,
right?
I
can't believe it.
I am shocked that this is actually just occurring. And everyone's like, well, that's golf. Here's the thing. Monahan had a chance to salvage whatever left of a pathetic, pitiful reputation he had, because he could have just stepped away yesterday. He could have said, I made my statements. I stand by what I said. I disagree with this merger.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, I orchestrated the merger and gave myself a fancy new title so I could keep my end of the bag.
Like, I don't even think he orchestrated.
Well, whatever role that he played.
It was a couple of guys on the PGA Tour, including a guy named Jimmy Dunn, who's kind of infamous for his deal making and his and then Jay Monahan was brought into it. So he was part of closing this whole deal. He just didn't have the initial conversations.
Yep.
But we need to talk about Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods, because nobody knew about this, including Rory and Tiger. And Monahan's excuse was that, listen, given the complexity, and this is a quote, of what we were dealing with, it's not uncommon that the circle of information is very tight. It's a little more uncommon when you're stabbing guys in the back. And like, Rory has actually made comments in the past that maybe the best thing for all this is if Liv wants to invest in golf, that we all do this together.
Mm-hmm.
And he has made those comments. Rory's biggest issue with this whole thing is that
players were leaving the PGA Tour
yes.
to go do this thing. It wasn't necessarily he actually wasn't really sitting there making a I will never take Saudi money. He just didn't like that the golf world had been fractured and that these guys were going and playing in these glorified exhibitions mm-hmm. wearing shorts and music was playing, and like it was just I don't know if he had an issue with that. And Tiger's issue was like, hey, you know, why are you guys leaving? If you want to be the best in the world, then you could got to compete against the world, best in the world. It was more a competitive thing, right? So Rory was out there saying that publicly every time. So I'm really curious, actually, to see what Rory says. He's scheduled to speak today at the Canadian Open, where he's the defending champ. And you'll remember 1 year ago, when he won the Canadian Open, the talk was how great the atmosphere was at the Canadian Open.
Yep.
And that's why guys like Rory are staying on the PGA Tour, because you juxtaposed it against the LIV Golf events, which were like no one was there, and it just seemed like an unserious competition. So I am very, very curious to hear from Rory McIlroy. Because part of me is like, he's going to come out swinging. He's going to say that, you know, Jay Monahan left him out there to take the arrows for the PGA Tour. And then behind Rory's back, he goes and strikes this deal.
Mm-hmm.
But then another part of me is like, Rory has said in the past that exactly what has transpired is what he thinks might be good for the game. That the Saudis just end up investing in the PGA Tour. Because if they got the money and they want to spend it, it's better that it goes to strengthening the PGA Tour, not creating some whole new league that fractures the golf world.
Oh, that's why I'm fascinated to hear what he has to say. Because he's either going to stand up and defend everything that the PGA Tour and he have been saying for the last year, or, like his commissioner, he might just capitulate and say, this is what we had to do, and this is the best thing for golf. To sum up this entire conversation before we move on to the big Philadelphia Flyers trade, let's hear. There's some guys that are really good at radio. We are not two of them. But there are other guys that have been doing this for a long time that have the ability to sum up everything in about 18 or 20 seconds. One of the best to ever do it, Mike Mad Dog Russo on Mad Dog Radio. 18 seconds essentially summed up the entire LIV situation, the entire PGA situation, and what the PGA looks like currently. Let's hear from him now.
You can't scream and yell as vehemently as the PGA people did about what a disgrace this is, turned your back on the PGA Tour because they decided to make the run for money, and then 14 months later, all of a sudden sign a deal that makes you an equal partner with LIV. The PGA Tour looks like a horse's ass right now.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, we go to Philadelphia, where the rebuild is now underway. The Philadelphia Flyers have traded Ivan Provorov, and a three-team trade involving the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Los Angeles Kings that sends Provorov to Columbus, a bunch of picks and money changing hands. Essentially, though, Jason, the biggest takeaway from this is the Philadelphia Flyers are open for business. Danny Briere and Keith Jones, the new brain trust, are looking to make their mark on the organization. And as Danny Briere said in his introductory presser and subsequent media availabilities, no one is untouchable on this Philadelphia Flyers roster, and that might include Carter Hart as well.
Yeah, so I know a lot of people are curious about can Provorov be a good player for Columbus, but I think the real story for me is how this might impact the goaltending offseason, the goaltending carousel, as we like to call it, in the offseason, because everyone's looking at Carter Hart now and going, okay, well, the Flyers have they're rebuilding, so they don't really care all that much about winning in the short term. So they got Cal Peterson from the LA Kings, and they took on his salary, and that was part of the whole deal. So everyone's looking at Carter Hart now and going, is he going to be traded?
Right.
And the funny thing is that one of the teams involved in this trade is a team that's going to be looking for a starting goalie. They've got Phoenix Copley.
You're talking about the Los Angeles Kings.
The LA Kings, yes. The LA Kings. So could Carter Hart end up in LA? You'd think that that would have been part of the discussion. But think of all the candidates to become a starting goalie that are available either in a trade, rumored, reported, or just free agents.
Mm-hmm.
Carter Hart is one of them.
Yep.
Korpisalo was already with the Kings. I don't know what they think of Korpisalo, but he's a candidate. Connor Hellebuck, obviously, has been in the news a lot.
Yeah.
People wondering what Winnipeg is going to do. And Winnipeg is a very interesting situation and for once could be very interesting in the offseason. We've talked about Tristan Jarry in Pittsburgh. I don't know how much his stock fell as the Pittsburgh Penguins missed the playoffs and he did not play well down the stretch. Freddie Anderson in Carolina was pretty good for the Hurricanes. He's an unrestricted free agent. The Hurricanes might just bring him back. And then you've got the Vegas goalies, Brossoit, UFA. Aiden Hill, I believe, is a pending UFA.
He is.
Alex Lyon in Florida, who played a little bit before Sergei Bobrovsky took over.
Will not start
game
three.
And will not start game three, by the way. But those are the names. So how is it all going to shake out in the end? It might all start with a Carter Hart trade, or maybe it starts with a Connor Hellebuck trade.
Yeah. I think Philadelphia becomes – I mean, we talked about this the moment that Briere and Jones took over. We were having the conversation about what teams this summer are looking to make moves. And we were doing it within the context and the framework of the Vancouver Canucks theoretically and seemingly needing to make moves this summer. You need a dance partner. You need a trade partner. You need someone that's willing to do the tango, if you will. So Philadelphia is absolutely one of these teams right now because – as the Provorov trade was being finalized yesterday, there was a bunch of smoke coming out of Philadelphia that Carter Hart was going to be next. Laddie?
Can I pour a little cold water on that, though?
You can pour cold water on anything, my friend.
I think a lot of those rumors were stemming from comments that Danny Briere had about a week ago where he refused to call Carter Hart untouchable, essentially.
He refused to call anybody untouchable,
That was the key to his statement. So I think a lot of these rumors are stemming from that. How many of them are you hearing from the real insiders in the game? Not a lot of people are throwing out those Carter Hart rumors, so I would maybe backtrack.
The only thing I would say is this.
But they're open for business. They've said
they are, but I think Carter Hart would be quite the package you would need to acquire him, and I don't think he's the top priority for the Flyers to move right now. They want to keep him.
I think that they're looking to blow the entire thing out and start from the ground floor, right? And
you got the goalie. Why would you get rid of that?
What Hart represents is the old firm, the old guard, the old regime to a certain degree. I mean, you've seen it with the NHL executives before, right?
Might hurt the tank.
Seriously. Yeah,
that would be another reason.
He could play too good, right? And that's a possibility. Of these guys, Laddie, Hart, Korpisalo, Hellebuck, Jarry, Anderson, Brossoit, Hill, Jarry, Lyon. Who's the good value play here? Who do you like as maybe the guy that's not necessarily the number 1A on the chart of available goalies, but a guy that maybe would represent the best value? Is there a Laddie sleeper in the
mix? I don't
think
there is, really. Of that group, not really. Like I would take Hellebuck every single day of that group, even though he comes at a premium price. But it depends where you stand and how you should pay your goalies, really.
Well, the interesting thing about Hellebuck is that I imagine that any team that acquires him is going to want to give him an extension, or that deal is going to come with an extension. He's got 1 year left before he's UFA. Mm-hmm. And that's the same for a few players in Winnipeg, right? That's why this could be a very interesting offseason in Winnipeg. And also the fact that I think they just want to shake things up a little bit with the Jets. But I think Philly... You know, I think the reason people are talking about Carter Hart, and you may be right. They might just be like, well, why are we going to trade this guy? We'll just keep him. Is that Danny Briere is new to the job. And I think he wants a blank canvas.
I would agree
with that. They want to build something and I think he's got a vision. And I think he's willing to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
So... next season is a pretty good draft, too.
Yeah, right? I mean, they've got the number 7 and number 23 picks now after this trade in this year's draft. So you can add Philly to that mix of teams that are probably going to define what that first round looks like, along with Arizona, Chicago, and the other teams that have multiple first-round picks. But Philadelphia all of a sudden becomes a team that you're looking at has the draft capital and is clearly motivated to add more, be it this year or the following year. So a lot of teams are going to be calling and wondering if they're open for business. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see. We got a lot more to get to on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We got to go to break. We didn't even get to the Alek Manoah thing, and I apologize because Alek Manoah is Well, he's on his way to the Florida Complex League. I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't know that's where you get sent when you're struggling as a pitcher.
We're sending you down to the complex.
You're going into baseball jail. Is that what you're really calling it?
Yes.
It's the Florida Penal League. I don't want to go there. No, it's the Florida Complex League. So we can get to that later on. We can preview tonight's Canadian Championship between the Whitecaps and Montreal. But coming up next, we're going to do some hockey talk with David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet, NHL host. He is coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Breaking down the biggest trends in hockey, the Hockey PDOcast with Dmitry Filipovich. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. David Amber, Sportsnet, Hockey Night Canada, NHL host, is going to join us in just a second here in hour one. Hour one is brought to you by Johnstone's Barbecues. You don't pay more to shop with the experts at Johnstone's Barbecues. No, you don't. They're open 5 days a week with two locations to serve you. Visit them online at johnstones.com. I know David is waiting, but we have made, Jason and I, the executive decision to pass along some breaking news right now.
Sportsnet 650, breaking news.
My God, for the second day in a row, we have breaking news on the Halford and Brough Show. According to multiple outlets from across Europe, Lionel Messi has made his decision on his playing future. It apparently will not be in the Saudi League, but rather, wait for it, Major League Soccer.
Is he coming to the Whitecaps?
No.
Oh.
Well, no.
What about Toronto?
No.
Montreal?
Also, no.
So he's
no
not coming
Canada.
To Canada.
Just wipe Canada off entirely.
All right.
He will be joining David Beckham's Inter Miami. That is the news that is making the rounds right now across social media. Mm-hmm. This had been rumored.
He has already decided to skip the game at BC Place.
Just that was written into his contract. Like, I don't even know what that turf looks like. I don't know why I can't get a tequila soda.
So we talking like a six-year, $6 million contract, something like that?
I don't know the parameters of the deal. The ones that were reported yesterday when this deal was percolating and coming to fruition were that he was getting all the stuff from Major League Soccer.
Revenue shares.
In Apple, because of course Apple TV is the media rights.
He actually owns MLS now.
Yeah, he actually owns Apple as well. It's Lionel Messi and Tim Cook now own Apple, so...
So we'll talk about that later, Messi to MLS. And if you watch the World Cup, you know that he's actually still got a bit of game left.
Yep. Okay, let's go to the phone lines now, joined by David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good. Hard to act to follow, though, right? I mean, I'm supposed to follow breaking news of World Cup champ coming to the MLS. What am I going to do now?
I know. We were looking at each other like, we got it. We had to put it out there now because, well, to be honest, we never get breaking news on our show. And it was kind of...
It's 2 days in a row now because we had the PGA Tour LIV Golf thing break on us yesterday. And we had Eric Engels on the show. And I know he's a big golf guy. So the three of us were basically just like, wow, that's crazy for 10 minutes while we tried to figure out if this was a joke.
And Rory McIlroy, I guess, is going to speak very shortly at the Canadian Open, so that'll be really interesting.
And, of course, from an NHL perspective, we do have, indeed, the Stanley Cup Final, but also big news going down in the midst of the Stanley Cup Final, and that began with what looks like the start of the rebuild in Philadelphia yesterday. Danny Briere, Keith Jones, their first big move in charge. A three-team trade involving Columbus, Los Angeles, and Philadelphia, in which Philadelphia sends Ivan Provorov out. Also rumblings that Carter Hart could be on his way as well, although I'm not sure how substantiated those are. I guess the big takeaway here, David, correct me if I'm wrong, is that yesterday signified the dawn of a new era in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Danny Briere's trying to, put his imprint on the team, and the imprint is, I'm willing to do what Chuck Fletcher maybe was reluctant to do, and that's rebuild this thing, tear it down and build it up. And Chuck Fletcher, instead added assets. He was adding the Ryan Ellis's. He was adding, good pieces to win immediately. And Danny Briere is sort of, I think, assessing, we're nowhere close to being a championship caliber team. Let's tear it to the studs if we have to, move out our young assets and get a lot of future assets and see where that takes us.
We're speaking to David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. David, I know that we've got a couple days off in the Stanley Cup Finals. It shifts back from Vegas to Florida. How big an undertaking is this going to be for the Panthers right now? Because nothing has gone their way in the first two games of the series. Bobrovsky's been the second best of the two goalies. Their big guns haven't been firing. Tkachuk has failed to find the back of the net and hasn't found the score sheet. He's found the penalty sheet, though. How big of an undertaking is this for the Panthers?
You could argue Bobrovsky's been the third best of three goalies. Alex Lyon looks pretty good in short stint. And this isn't on Bobrovsky. I mean, I think, yes, he is part of the equation. But bottom line is, it's just been, you know, dominance from Vegas, guys, from really the start of the third period of game one till now. I mean, they've outscored Florida 10-2. Florida's been running around trying to take this thing into the gutter at times, and you know, Vegas isn't intimidated. They're just not buying into that. They're not playing that game. You mentioned Matthew Tkachuk. It's not great when a guy has three 10-minute misconducts in the first two games. It's not even easy to do if you think about that. So it's been a lack of discipline. Vegas has been the better team by and large, and certainly has received better goaltending. And I think if there was one storyline that we were waiting to see how it played out in the Stanley Cup final, was will Sergei Bobrovsky still have that magic that he had in Carolina or versus Carolina and versus the Leafs? And how would Aiden Hill, someone who'd never been in this situation before and was thrust into the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, unexpectedly in the second round versus Edmonton, how would he, you know, cope against the team that has a way of getting into, you know, has made a reputation for getting into the goalie's crease, into their space, into their face, you know, and we've seen this in both games. They've challenged both times Matthew Tkachuk, Sam Bennett, you know, inside the crease on top of Aiden Hill. How would he handle that? And it doesn't seem to be fazing him at all. So check marks to Aiden Hill. He's been unflappable would be the best word I would use. And meanwhile, Sergei Bobrovsky and maybe that 9-day layoff really proved to be damaging. He's looked, you know, average. He's looked human. And put those two things combined, unless Florida gets that type of goaltending they got from Bobrovsky in the previous two rounds, and unless Aiden Hill slips a little bit, I think we're seeing that, you know, Vegas is the better all-around team, and that really tips the scales largely in their favor.
Do you think we might see Florida in Game 3 just get back to playing hockey? Because it seems like, you know, like I'm not surprised that Game 2 devolved into a bit of a beer league game. That's a blowout. And I'm not surprised that Tkachuk took the opportunity to really smoke Jack Eichel over the middle. Like, I'm sure that part of the decision to make that hit was, okay, here comes Jack Eichel through the middle of the ice. We're losing 4-0. Let's really send a message here, or even, I don't know. Let's see if Jack Eichel can survive this in the series. But I just feel like Florida has tried to get under the skin of Vegas, and Vegas has just laughed at them. So maybe the more appropriate strategy for Game 3 is, like, forget all that stuff. Don't get distracted by any of that. Just play hockey. Take care of both ends of the ice. And Because if you just keep trying to do the same thing, Vegas is just going to keep laughing at you, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to be intimidated, that's for sure. And, you know, the hit on Eichel I had no problem with. I think our panel did a great job of breaking it down. Kelly Rudy, Jennifer Botterill, Kevin Bieksa, showing that, you know, Eichel just didn't see him in the crosshairs. And then he might have, you know, made things worse by sort of lurching forward as opposed to maybe even falling backwards, right? So I had no problem. Pardon me, I had no problem with the hit from Tkachuk. He kept his elbow in. It was clean. It's all the rest of the junk. It's all the rest of the post-whistle, face washes, little jabs, etc. You know, in the second round versus the Leafs, the storyline was Florida had, well, first of all, Bobrovsky, but then the second line was Florida had this tenacious forecheck. They were coming at waves and just pounding and pounding and pounding Liljegren and Hall and Giordano, etc. Shen. You know, it's not working. Pietrangelo, McNabb, Haig, who's a very big man, White Cloud, they're not intimidated by it, and they're not bothered by it. And, you know, I think there's a level of frustration setting in where Vegas's game plan, or Florida's game plan, which worked so well in previous rounds, just isn't working. And they're not sure maybe what to do. And again, in both games, like you said, it turned into beer league. It turned into, okay, fine. You know, let's try and we're going to try and beat you up. We're not going to beat you on the score sheet. And it's just not, they're not built that way. They're built to be aggressive, but they're not, you know, the 1970s Philadelphia Flyers, right? Like, they're just not. So I do think their best players have to be a lot better, whether it's Tkachuk, Verhaeghe, Bennett, who's been off the quiet, Reinhardt. They need to get some offense. They need to play with a lead. They need to get Vegas a little bit on their heels and make them uncomfortable playing hockey and on the score sheet, not trying to make them uncomfortable with all the other theatrics, which clearly isn't working right now.
David, if you had a Conn Smythe vote, who would you vote for?
We talked about this at dinner last night, and to me, the two front runners, presumably, if Vegas wins this series, would be Jonathan Marchessault, who started out incredibly quiet, guys. He started out, didn't score in the Winnipeg series, was a bit of a pass, not a passenger, but just didn't have an impact in that decisive series win versus Winnipeg. And then he came alive, and he leads the team, I believe, with 11 or 12 goals now. He's been a real force. He's just flying around the ice. He scored timely goals. He's, but, you know, in many respects, he's a bit of the heartbeat of the team. And then Aiden Hill, and I know he didn't play in the first round, but he's been very, very solid. At stretches in that Dallas series, the Stars were the better team, and the difference was Aiden Hill made save after save. Here he is in the final, guys on his crease, guys in his face, et cetera, and he's made some big saves. And granted, he's had the run support to help him here, but you know, I do think that's a storyline. When, what do you have, 940 save percentage or something? I mean, that's not nothing, right? That's something. I'm looking at it right now, 937 save percentage, a 206 goals against. He's been very good. So to me, those would be the two front runners. You know, there's been other guys who've obviously contributed as well, but to me, those would be the two guys I would point to.
You know, part of the conversation about the Conn Smythe, if you're going the way of Vegas, which a lot of people probably are right now with the 2-0 lead in the Stanley Cup final, is that it's hard to pick one particular guy because there's so many different guys that have shown up for this team in the postseason. And I guess that's reflective of the team building that they've done in Vegas. Yeah. You know, I go back and I think about the first round against Winnipeg. I think, and of course, this is because we're Canadian, but a lot of the focus was on Winnipeg, not necessarily Vegas. It was what Winnipeg was doing or not doing, as opposed to what the Golden Knights were doing. Second round, obviously a lot of the focus is going to be on Edmonton because of McDavid and Draisaitl and all of Kane. And then in the conference final, I felt like we kind of said, well, Dallas kind of looks like the inferior team. And I don't know if we've ever really truly either given enough credit or really truly appreciated how good of a team this Vegas team is. And they've just kind of been there, even though they were like a 107-point regular season team and a top seed. And now we're really starting to see on the biggest stage, the key to this team is that the depth that they have, I think it might be unparalleled in the NHL, because I don't know another team that can roll this many lines and have this many guys contributing on a regular basis. It just seems like line after line, defensive pairing after defensive pairing, Vegas has quality guys across the board on this team.
You know, I couldn't say it better. I really couldn't. I mean, you hit it on the head. They had a number of guys. I believe they had 8 players miss at least 15 games during the regular season. They had a lot of injuries, a lot of guys out. They survived without Stone. They survived without all these other players. And they're just a top-to-bottom fantastic team. They've had 9 different players score in the first 2 games of this series. I mean, this hasn't been a one-man show. This hasn't been a McDavid or Draisaitl type situation. This has been top to bottom, and I think that's the best way to put it. And I think in a way what we're seeing play out there is the depth of their blue line specifically is so much greater than the depth of Florida's blue line. It just is. And now that Radko Gudas has been banged up, left game one, returns, comes to game two, lasts all of what, 2 shifts, looked very wobbly leaving the ice, it speaks volumes here. So Vegas has been, they have a bunch of unsung heroes, if you want to put it that way. You know, the Zach Whitecloud and the Nicholas Haigs and the Nicholas Waugh's, and you know, the Carriers. You have all these guys who will grind you and play you very hard and have, you know, surprising skill, even though they might be, you know, in different roles. And then what they've done, and Kelly McCrimmon deserves a lot of credit, is, you know, whether it's Pietrangelo, whether it's Eichel, whether going out and getting Stone, really since year one, they've been very dedicated to building a championship team. And George McPhee, who's now the president of Hockey Ops, deserves a lot of credit because he was the original architect and he fleeced so many teams into making these horrible deals to, we'll allow you to protect this guy, but we need five draft picks and that and the rest. And, you know, it's worked out wonderfully. And you're right. I mean, this is the epitome of a team. All you need to know is this. Adin Hill started the year, guys, as their number four goaltender in depth. That's how deep. How many teams can you say, well, we're going to put go into the playoffs and essentially have to ride our number four goaltender and have success? Not many, right? And that was a pretty shrewd pickup. They give San Jose, I think it was, a fourth-round pick or something like that. And it just speaks that you could slide different people into the right setting with this deep group and have success. And it's been interesting to see. Everything comes down to tomorrow night. We're kind of writing off Florida. I'm not ready to write them off because they've been so good, guys. But you know, at this point, it just seems like Vegas is this machine that's going to be very hard to slow down.
Game three of the Stanley Cup Final goes tomorrow, 5 o'clock from Florida. It's the Panthers and the Golden Knights. Panthers looking to avoid going down 0-3 in the series. David, thanks a lot for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the game tomorrow night and the rest of the week. We'll do this again next week.
Thanks so much, fellas. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, talk to you soon. Thank you. That's David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. You, Jason, have some news out of Ontario with
Oakdale.
Oakdale. Where's Oakdale, laddie? Do you know?
It's Ontario. Just outside of Toronto?
Oakville?
Oakdale.
Oh, maybe it's Oakville.
That's I was born.
Okay. All right. Whatever.
Oh. Yeah. Rory McIlroy. two famous things have happened now.
Rory McIlroy spoke at the Canadian Open. And for those of you that expected Rory to come out firing against Jay Monahan and say, "You stabbed me in the back. You blindsided us." You know, we talked about this earlier in the show and noted that Rory had softened his stance a little bit. And that continued on in his press conference today. He said he has confidence in Jay Monahan. "I do," he said, apparently. "The future of the PGA Tour looks brighter." And he said of the merger, "When I look at the bigger picture and I look 10 years down the line, I think this will be good for the game of golf." Now, you had to have been paying attention to how Rory's stance on, let's call it, as opposed to LIV Golf, let's call it Saudi investment in the PGA Tour. Because I think you have to separate those two things. About a year ago, he did an interview in the Washington Post where he basically acknowledged that the money was coming from Saudi Arabia into the sports world. Mm-hmm. He was saying, listen, they are big sponsors of Formula One. There's investment in soccer, world soccer. So he basically said, "I understand people's reservations with that investment, but here's the quote. But at the same time, if these people are serious about investing billions of dollars into golf, I think ultimately that's a good thing, but it has to be done the right way. And I think if they were to invest, having it be invested inside the existing structures, so that is the PGA Tour." So Rory's basically saying, listen, I don't like what Saudi Arabia does, but they're already investing money. So why don't we take that money and invest it in the PGA Tour as opposed to it being invested in a rival league that I don't really respect? But Rory also still harbors hard feelings about the guys that defected.
Yeah.
And he said today, there still has to be actions. The people who left the PGA Tour, we can't just let them back in.
Well, his quote on golf.com, we've got some audio from Sky Sports. We'll play it in a sec. I don't know if this clip will be in there, but Rory said, very definitively, I still hate Liv. I hate them. I hope it goes away. So he's trying to reposition this as a tour versus tour thing. And I think trying to get away, and perhaps, God, I hate saying this, but PR savvy is probably trying to get away from the morality plays that PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan and a lot of the PGA Tour players threw out there, and trying to make this about PGA versus Liv and not necessarily about Saudi Arabia and human rights violations and blood money and everything else that's been thrown out there. Let's hear the audio now from Rory McIlroy speaking today.
From Oakdale Golf Course. Yeah. So that's the course. So
township, actually. I looked that up while we were at the break as well.
Great.
Yeah, here we go.
I have no idea where that is.
Rory McIlroy.
You know, I think ultimately this is going to be it's going to be good for the game of professional golf. I think it secures the it unifies it, and it secures its financial future. So you know, there's mixed emotions in there as well, as there's going to be. I don't understand all the intricacies of what's going on. It's a very what's the word? You know, there's a lot of ambiguity. There's a lot of things still to be sort of thrashed out, but at least it means that the litigation goes away, which has been a massive burden for everyone that's involved with the tour and that's playing the tour, and we can start to work toward, you know, some sort of way of unifying the game at the elite level.
Adam on the left.
Rory, has over the last day with the different meetings and the conversations you've had with players, has your opinion changed at all? Have you sort of started to see where this is all going? And are you excited about this? Are you optimistic about this? Kind of as you project it forward, what do you?
Yeah. So I mean, I think the one thing that I think was really misconstrued yesterday was, you know, all the headlines were PGA Tour merges with Liv, and Liv has got nothing to do with this, right? I mean, it's the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and the Public Investment Fund are basically partnering to create a new company. You know, this has gotten, you know, I think that's where I was a little frustrated, because all I've wanted to do and all I've wanted, you know, in the past year from basically this tournament is to protect the future of the PGA Tour and protect the aspirational nature of what the PGA Tour stands for, and I hope that this does that. But you know, I think with the headlines being merges with Liv, like that's not the. I mean, if you look at the structure of how it's structured down, this new company sits above everything. Jay's the CEO of that, so technically, anyone that is involved with Liv now would answer to Jay. So you know, the PGA Tour have control of everything. And the one thing as well is, you know, whether you like it or not, the PIF are going to keep spending money in golf. At least the PGA Tour now controls how that money is spent.
So that's Rory McIlroy from the RBC Canadian Open, where he's the defending champ. We've got an open segment on the other side, so we can dip into the Dunbar Lumber text line and discuss whatever you want to discuss. Text in your questions, comments, opinions. 650-650 Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you. In Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Butuus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. A lot of big stories in the world of sports right now. You can comment on the PGA Tour Live Golf merger, which I don't know is a merger between PGA Tour and Live Golf. Let's call it the Saudi investment in the PGA Tour, because I think Live Golf is going to be gone.
That's how Rory was certainly framing it.
Yeah. There is the other bit of breaking news. We got breaking news yesterday with the PGA Tour, and the breaking news today is that Lionel Messi is coming to MLS with Miami. There was a big trade in the NHL yesterday, if you want to get it back to the hockey talk, involving the Los Angeles Kings, Columbus Blue Jackets, and Philadelphia Flyers. Canucks still haven't done anything. We're still waiting on the Vancouver Canucks to do anything. So text in your comments into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.